Welcome back to Ed Says. Millennials, money, it's a big question. I talk about it a lot when it comes to their wages and their costs of living. Joining us now is Greg Mangelsdorf. He's a certified financial planner with Atlas Wealth Advisors. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Ed. Thanks for having me.
So one of the things I mention on this show frequently, even though I'm older than them and really don't have a dog in the fight when it comes to millennials, is the fact that their wages aren't keeping up with the rate of inflation, and I don't think have done so for a decade or two. How are they managing to make it when it comes to not only their wages, but the burden of higher education, which they've been told to get, but is also increased exponentially since, say, 50 years ago?
Well, Ed, I think you nailed it when you said that their wages are not where they should be. A recent study shows that they're earning up to 20% less than their parents were at the same age. So what we're really seeing is a perfect storm of high interest, credit card debt, student loans, low wages, all pushing in the wrong direction against millennials right now.
Now, when you mentioned credit card debt, and I'm going to take the stance of an old curmudgeon, even though I know the answer to this, but to explain it, what do you say to the older person who says, well, if you didn't want to get in credit card debt, why did you use the credit card?
Well, you know, that's always a good question. Everyone has their own specific answers as to what was going on. A lot of times we see an insufficient emergency fund, which means something came up, a car repair or an illness, something, you didn't have the cash on hand to pay for it, you had to put it on a credit card, and now you're behind.
Right, so it's everybody, and I'll be the first to admit, when I was in college, I bought an Xbox and a TV when I shouldn't have, I took a cruise, and it took me years to pay off, because as you said, it was high interest. Actually, my interest wasn't that bad till the crash, and then the interest jumped up. I don't know if you remember that. And
yeah, that's never fun.
Yeah, when I had, you know, a single digit interest rate and then everything changed. They're like, yeah, we changed it. And now it's like 17%. I'm like, what?
yeah, good luck with that.
But everybody says, you know, everybody who's arguing against it wants to say, oh, they're just wasting it. But the reality is for some people, the credit card is. It's groceries. It's a repair. There's a week where, say, if you're in restaurants, as a lot of students are, you don't make the money that week. It's just bad. Or an unforeseen sickness. If you're not making the wages, you're not making the money to put into that emergency fund, and you got to survive somehow, right?
That's right. It's a vicious cycle. And I think it really starts with budgeting. Of course, you can't budget for an unforeseen illness or a car repair. But if you're tracking every dollar in and out, you can start building up that emergency fund, and hopefully that cushion is large enough to protect you when something unforeseen happens. It always does. You've got to have that emergency fund. It's just a fact of life.
And am I correct in saying if you are, say, out of school, you're working, and you own a home, you want to have at least 3 months' worth of bills and mortgage payments and all that in your emergency fund?
Absolutely, at least 3 months. You know, I typically work with a little bit more conservative clients, and we like to see 6 months or more.
Holy
it really
cow.
Depends on your station in life. You just don't want to have that money open to the changes of the market. So you want to have that very secure and readily accessible.
And when it comes to credit cards, because, again, that's another thing that comes up, but we also see these companies show up on college campuses and push their wares to what could be an uneducated incoming class. Because do you think our educational systems are doing enough to teach people about, you know, credit to debt ratio, APR, you know, revolving debt, all of these things that go into creating a credit score, or are they just shoving them out and saying, hey, sign up for this card to buy your books?
You know, I think it's unfortunate, but I don't think there is enough education. You know, take budgeting, for example. That is a basic life skill, but you've got to practice it. You've got to be dedicated to it. If you just do it one time a year, that's not enough to be successful. These are things that we need to teach, and we need to practice, and we need to hold each other accountable.
Is there anything as far as student debt that you foresee coming? I have said that the higher education is the next bubble. When the federal government decides maybe we shouldn't be just handing out money, or the students who have those loans just begin defaulting on them one way or another. I know death can't rub it from your credit history or you're owing it. But do you foresee something happening? Because the admissions costs and all the rates are going up, and it's just not sustainable.
Well, I think we're already seeing it. I don't have the numbers in front of me specifically telling me the drag on today's economy, but the entire market for student loan is $1.3 trillion. If you're under the age of 40, you own over $700 billion of student loan debt. I mean, that definitely has an impact on the economy. It's going to be showing up in everything that we do.
Holy cow. So to put that in layman's terms for somebody who is just hearing numbers, that means that's money that was paid to, or is being paid to loans or banks that was paid for an education. If that education wasn't so expensive, that could be money that would be flowing to other parts of the economy, correct?
That's exactly right. So let me throw some more numbers at you. The average student loan debt at graduation is over $30,000. That could be 10 years of paying it back with over $10,000 of interest. Now,
oh,
if you're 25 and you've got $30,000 of debt, are you going out in the economy? Are you buying things? Maybe you are with a credit card, but eventually all this interest is just sucking all the energy out of your budget.
That's incredible. I mean, and you're talking to a guy who's still paying for his loans. I wish I could have done it. I took the 20-year route, let alone I wish
wow.
I could have done the 10. We did the interest up front portion, but, you know, we're still paying for some of that. And I'm looking at it, it's paying it off. But you're right. Yeah. And I didn't even go to a good school and I didn't even get a good degree. I majored in mass comm, Greg. I'm a mass communications major. I can't do anything with that if this dries up.
Well, you know, you mentioned good schools. Even, you know, state schools versus private schools, these are still very expensive programs.
Oh, I
People
went to
are
a
graduating
state school, yeah.
from debt from all across the education spectrum.
And what can we do about it, though? It seems as though it's kind of just the way it is.
Well, I mean, there's economic policies, but I don't know the ins and outs of those. On a personal level, it's about discipline. It's about budgeting. It's about tracking your dollars and just getting a little bit better every month.
Greg, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully talk to you again soon, and we'll have better news as millennials are facing an uphill battle, and it seems like those who can help them out are just looking down at them saying, nope, I did it on my own by working a summer job.
Well, you know, unfortunately, summer jobs don't cover the $30,000 of debt.
You mean to tell me a summer internship doesn't pay you 30 grand?
Good luck finding a summer internship that's actually paying these days.
Oh, Greg, you are so right. Thank you for your time, sir.
Ed, you have a good morning.
888-574-2723, the number into the studio. It's hilarious when someone wants to get on their soapbox and say, well, I worked my way through and I had a summer job. And, well, you know what? Your tuition was, you know, a couple $100 or maybe a couple $1,000 a semester as opposed to, you know, that's a week now. Is it our own fault? It could be. Do we need to stop trying? But we're competitive. We keep trying to send our kids to bigger and better schools when we don't need to. And then that just, it's our competitiveness that raises the cost of it as well. These schools are becoming more and more like resorts rather than places of education. 888-574-2723 at Ed Says CT on Twitter. The email Ed Says at talkofconnecticut.com. A caller previous of about, I don't know, 15 minutes ago said I should reintroduce myself because they're a new listener. And I guess I should do that every once in a while. Hello, I'm Ed, hence the name Ed Says. And this is in reference to someone last week who was throwing insults my way and making broad generalizations. I am a married man. I have a degree in mass comm. I have a 3-year-old son and another kid on the way. I've worked in radio since the early 2000s, worked in restaurants before that, decided to go back to school after a few years in restaurant management in my early years out of high school. I honestly thought I was going to make it in restaurants, and then I was like, oh man, this is a lot of hours. No, not looking down my nose at any of you that work in that industry. I almost did it. It was just too much work for me. I'm lazy. In fact, I'm overly critical when I go into restaurants. But at the same time, I also overly praise and overly tip. I almost complimented a Taco Bell at the mall the other day because it was really good. Like, it, Taco Bell's great in a pinch. I enjoy it. But it's not meant to be, you know, the end-all be-all of Mexican food, if you can even call it authentic Mexican food, because you can't. But I had really good Taco Bell. Like, Taco Bell is like pizza. It's good, but if it's really good, like my history in restaurants, I wanted to say something. I want to go up to the guy and go, this is the best Taco Bell I have ever had. But I digress. When it comes to this show, I encourage interaction. I encourage you to call, tweet, email. I discourage you from calling the building and leaving me a voicemail because I don't have, I can't listen to them all. So I just delete, just to be fair. It's just delete, delete, delete. I discourage you from calling the studio and just talking to my producers. My producers are Jim, Christian, and Max. They do a great job. But between the three of them, they probably have a hard time. Would have a hard time.
It starts with the letter C.
Would you stop? This is. Did you know I was going to insult you? Is this? You heard it coming.
I heard it coming.
You heard it coming. So decided to interrupt me with my favorite member of Sesame Street. Turn that up.
C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. Oh, cookie, cookie, cookie.
Okay. You can turn it off now. But I have three producers who do a wonderful job, but would have a hard time finding their way out of a garage if the bay door was open.
I can turn it back on.
Yeah, I know. I just had to get my insult out. Come on. And but calling them and yelling at them for something, Obama ordered wiretaps on him, which is just an attempt to confuse you and basically direct your attention elsewhere. Donald Trump is a man who has been dabbling in conspiracy theory for years. And it should be no surprise that he is doing it now. He was the birther in chief. And now he is creating these things out of thin air, spinning stories in an attempt to garner sympathy and deflect responsibility. I've said it before a million times in regards to both the Democrats and the Republicans and just our government in general. We need leaders. And we are starkly short of them right now, and definitely not getting it from our president. If our president were a leader, he wouldn't be doing what he's doing. He wouldn't be shouting, Obama wiretapped me, or tweeting it. He would be saying, there are investigations ongoing. We'll wait the results and move on from there. He wouldn't deflect. He wouldn't say, no, but look what they did to me. It's not what a leader does. He would move on and lead. He would be doing things that make us all feel better. But instead, he's playing the victim. And sorry, that's not what I look for in a leader. To use a sports analogy, I like hockey, so let's go with hockey. Do you cheer for the player who takes a slash, keeps skating and powers through and scores the goal? Or do you cheer for the player who takes the slash, dives, pretends like he's hurt, and then ends up getting the penalty for embellishment? Firstly, I like the player that toughs through and scores the goal. That's a leader. That's someone saying, it doesn't matter what happens, I'm going to do my job. And right now, we don't have that. We have someone who holds up a giant shield, the lack of responsibility shield, and deflects everything possible. Now, make no mistake, if you're not catching it, I've never been a Trump supporter. But this has nothing to do with it. This is basing it on his actions since taking office. I knew he wasn't fit for it when he was running. Anybody who's looked at him in the past 30 years, and to tell me that a 70-year-old man of privilege would be able to change is laughable.